Hello and welcome to episode 6 of the NRL Fantasy Amateurs podcast. As always, Mark here with Ryan. Ryan, how you doing, mate?
I'm good, Mark. How are you, mate?
Mate, I am absolutely fantastic and I'm excited to tell you why I'm fantastic. So The NRL Fantasy Amateurs podcast has now surpassed 500 listens on our episodes.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
It is awesome. And I'm just so pumped. Like, you know, we were saying when we started this, we couldn't expect it to be even, you know, half of that would have been awesome. So, yeah, it's just absolutely growing furiously. Obviously, you're liking the content that we're putting out. So hopefully we can give you a really awesome episode today. What we're going to do today is something that a lot of people get really excited about, which is pods. So obviously there's still a while to go until the season starts, but there's some guys here that are just super low ownership and they really shouldn't be. So Ryan and I are going to run through our list of a little over 20 players here who are guys who we definitely think you should be considering for your team, and they're going to be sub 10% ownership. A lot of them are actually sub 5%. So we might just jump straight in and go to the first guy here who's 0.7% ownership. And I think maybe that's going to grow in the coming days after the news from yesterday that Cameron McInnes has ruptured his ACL, and that is Andrew McCulloch. So Ryan, you are a fan of McCulloch. Why don't you tell us what your thoughts are on him?
Yeah, Andrew is one that bolted into pod contention yesterday after that awful news. But yeah, I had Andrew last year as a pod, and he was great for me until he, you know, did the splits and got a leg ripped off. But yeah, prior to that, though, he was excellent. In his 7 appearances last year under the new rules where he was playing 80 minutes, he averaged 65.5, and he was getting about 57 tackles per game, which is, you know, pretty incredible, really.
Yeah, but it's actually a good step down from what McInnes was doing as well. So
that is true. Yeah, and he's going into a side that, you know, unlike the Knights, that don't have as bright outlook in terms of top 8 potential. So there's a pretty good chance he could even increase that 57 tackles per game.
Yeah, absolutely. And I tend to agree. I'm looking at McCulloch, and he's not officially a Dragon yet, but all the talk is that the Dragons wanted him. And, you know, they were negotiating with the Broncos about if or how much the Broncos were going to pay of his salary, because the Broncos don't want to pay any of it. So assuming that all gets finalized, McCulloch comes over and becomes a Dragon, would have to imagine that he's going to play 80 minutes. Even if he plays 70 minutes, he still should beat that 54 break even, I guess, but he becomes less of an attraction. But I don't know if you agree with me here, Ryan, that we believe sort of Jack Bird's going to be the 14.
Yeah, from what we've seen, it seems like they're going to ease him in. It seems like they're going with a little bit of a position battle at the other centre role. A lot of people own Bird at the moment, but I think we've both got him coming off the bench. I know you've thrown around the term Black Widow 2.0.
Yep. Yeah, so, I mean, that all bodes well for McCulloch, because Jack Bird could play hooker in a pinch, or he could play 5-8 and Ben Hunt could play hooker in a pinch. I really can't see that. I'd see that being more of an injury-related thing than a tactical thing. So I definitely think McCulloch's in line for a good 80-minute role, assuming that all that, you know, the paperwork gets all, you know, signed off and he becomes a Dragon. Next guy on the list here is Wade Egan at 6.7%. So Egan, obviously, is playing for the Warriors this year, as he did last year, but no Carl Lawton on the bench. So with Egan, he seemed to perform better the more minutes that he played, is something that I've sort of found, or from watching him. And I think really if he can secure an 80 minute role, he's looking at a 45 or so average there for only 441k based on what my projection looks like. What are your thoughts on Egan?
Yeah, he's an interesting prospect. I think me, I've generally just avoided a lot of Warriors just because of all the uncertainty around, you know, their bench composition and, you know, who's going to get what minutes currently. And there's also a lot of other good options out there, you know, cheaper options in terms of like Jaden Brayley, Jacob Little. I'm not really too sure what to predict. Do you think he'll be getting 80 minutes this year?
I think it's likely. They did speak about it on the Talking League podcast that they wanted Wade Egan to play the 80 minutes. and his 80-minute average in his career in first grade is 46, only with one try in that. And, you know, he's got a pretty good base there of 42 tackles. He does actually have a pretty good kicking game, but his average is only 19 kick meters. So I expect that to possibly even get a little bit of a boost. He realistically could be a 50-point player with developing combinations and if, you know, if he's able to actually play 80 minutes. But there is a question around it. Obviously, it's not a guarantee. And and like you say, there is guys like your Brayley and your Little and even, you know, Watson there between those three. Plus, say a guy like McCulloch, you've got four hookers in your team already and you're sort of not really sure what to do with that. Now, obviously, if the Knights start up this year and, you know, say we lose Jaden Brayley because Kurt Mann's on the bench there and they say he's going to play 20 minutes of hooker or whatever and Brayley's only going to play 60 and we lose Jacob Little because of another reason, say he gets injured, which, you know, it's possible, you know, maybe we might have to look at a guy like Wade Egan. I think it's more of a positional, depending on sort of who else is available for me with him. But yeah, nonetheless, probably a good option, just not as good as some of the other guys who are cheaper and have a similar outlook. The next guy on our list here is Mitch Rain. So last year he played for the Titans and their hooker spot was a little bit sort of, what's a good word for this? It mixed around a lot, you know? So Ryan, you're a little bit interested in Rain. Tell me what you sort of saw in him.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt he's a good fantasy player. There's a lot of uncertainty around Reigns. I've got a little bit of an asterisk next to him because he does need some things to go his way in terms of playing enough minutes. So last year, he does have two sub-50-minute games that are dragging down his price. Without those, he averaged 52 in 65 minutes. And under the new rules, in seven appearances, he had a PPM of 0.85. So, I mean, if he somehow does get an 80-minute role, he seems like a cut-price keeper to me. If he can somehow get, you know, at least 60 minutes, he could even be a pretty good stepping stone to somebody else. But a lot of that relies on how are they going to use him this year and, you know, are they going to have Tanner Boyd or Aaron Clark or, you know, even Tyrone Peachy stealing a lot of minutes?
Yeah. Absolutely. And I mean, the thing is with the Titans, though, I think they are looking for that big minute hooker. And I mean, even if Tanner Boyd's on the bench and he comes off the bench for 10 or 15 minutes and Rain can secure a 65 minute role there, you know, I think he averaged 50 over 55 at 65 minutes last year. So it's definitely possible that even if he's not playing 80, he could be a good option there at sort of a 50s, mid 50s average, and then an upgrade target to somebody like a Damien Cook or something later on in the season after Origin's all done. So I'm definitely on the Mitch Rain train. The only thing that could derail, or the big thing for me that could derail the Mitch Rain train, is Cameron Smith signing with the Titans, which is a rumor that's running absolutely rampant at the moment. So if Smith signs with the Titans, obviously that just absolutely destroys Mitch Rain. But at the moment, I've actually got Rain sitting in my team. I'm feeling more optimistic this morning. I said to Ryan earlier, I'm feeling a little bit like a mad scientist at the moment. So I'm fiddling. I've got the Des Hasler. I'm fiddling with some combinations. Currently I'm liking the look of my team with Rain actually instead of McCulloch in there at the moment, just because that money allowed me to do something else, which I'll bring up a bit later on in the show. But yeah, definitely something that I'm interested in there with Rain.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's currently raining where I am. It might be a sign of the fantasy gods.
Great. Love it. Raining with the rain. So the next guy on our list is somebody that we agree is just an absolute, basically a no-brainer to start the year, whether or not he's goal-kicking even, which is Taki Aho. So Taki Aho is sitting at 7% ownership, price at 674K. I don't know about you, Ryan. I've got him projected somewhere over 60 for this year.
Yeah, I'm surprised his ownership is so low. Like when we were trying to find guys under 10% for this podcast and he popped up at only 7. It's, yeah, quite surprising to me. He's, you know, he's priced at 50. You know, if you remove a couple of games where he played under 30 minutes last year, he averaged 54 with a BPM of 0.9. So, I mean, if you want to chuck on goal kicking there and plus the fact he won't be playing Origin, you know, he could easily be pushing 60.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you take that 54, add 6 points of goal kicking, which is pretty conservative for the Roosters, and you're at 60. Not to mention, obviously, he should get a little bit of minutes uplift when you consider that he needs to be on the field to do the goal kicking. Yeah, he seems to me like at his current price point, just an absolute no-brainer. The next guy on our list is somebody that I am pretty interested in. I don't have him on my team at the moment, but it's just because of salary cap. It's not because I don't think he's a good option. And that's Alex Twell at 2.5%. So Twell comes in just over 700K. So I think he's 709K. And last year, obviously, he had a bit of a disrupted season. Poor NRL physio was getting absolutely hammered about Alex Twell updates on Twitter and Facebook. But you know, when he actually played good minutes, he had an awesome average. So just looking at his stats from last year, 65 at a 65 minute sort of average, I have him down for 59 points, which would be a 6-point boost on his current average and put him firmly, you know, that would have made him about the third or fourth best middle last year. What are your thoughts on Twell?
Yeah, I've been waiting for you to give me a bit of a hard sell on it because I'm a little bit skeptical. I don't know. I've currently opted for Nathan Brown, who I know you've got projected at a similar price. The thing with Twell for me is just the way his minutes have fluctuated over the last 2 years. It seems like they almost change on a whim depending on how Madge is feeling that day. That's the only thing that gives me a bit of concern about Twell. Well, what do you think? What do you think their bench composition and how many minutes do you think he's going to play?
Mate, well, if I'm looking at the Tigers, I'm seeing, obviously, with Dane Laurie coming in, who we'll talk about a little bit later, that's going to push Mbai probably to the number 14 jersey. Obviously, Mbai can play everywhere from 1 to 7 plus cover the 9. So he makes the most sense to be that utility. And he'll probably split time with Little in our standard sort of game, I would expect, meaning that they're going to be rolling with 3 forwards off the bench. So you look at starting probably Offa Hengawi and Tamu, and then you'll have McKaylee and likely Stefano coming off the bench. And those guys, I would project, would be playing, splitting 80 minutes each between the four of them, so playing 160 of those minutes. So there you've got Twell, and then the two back rowers being Luciano and Sean Bloor, most likely. But Bloor hasn't necessarily shown that he can play a regular 80 minutes. So what I'm sort of expecting is they get that third forward that's going to be on the bench is going to be a guy, say like a guy like Luke Garner, who can play either middle or edge. And what you'll find is he'll probably take 10 minutes from Twell and 15 or 20 minutes from Bloor, and he'll fill his 35 odd minutes that way. So Twell can play 65, 70 minutes a game. And then in the event where there is an injury through the forwards, they just roll 12 for the 80 minutes because he's shown he can do it. He had 3 games in a row last year, rounds 3, 4, and 5, where his lowest amount of minutes was 76 minutes. So, he's shown he can do it. The one knock on Twell is he's not an attacking player. So, he needs to be on the field making those tackles. He was averaging 43 tackles in 58 minutes last year, which is, that's a lot for a middle forward as opposed to a hooker. But it's definitely, he's under 100 meters in 58 minutes as well. So obviously what they would be hoping to get from him is a little bit more work in the attacking game. And, even if it's just, taking hit ups, he's got all but 4 of those games, he was under 100 meters. So it is something that where they're probably missing something. But, when you're looking at that team and they've got James Roberts, Leilua, Nofaluma, brought Laurie in, they don't necessarily need every single one of their forwards to be that dynamic attacking player. They got guys all over the park that can do that. They really need a slow and steady wins the race sort of guy, and that can be 12.
All right, I'm sold.
Good. Put him in your team. Done. The next guy, though, is somebody that you just mentioned earlier, which is Nathan Brown. I have had Nathan Brown in and out of my team through the offseason as well. He's priced at about 30K more than Twell at 734. Similar ownership, 2.8 with Twell at 2.5. Where did you sort of arrive at with Nathan Brown?
Yeah, so Brownie for me, like last year when he played at least 60 minutes, which he did in 13 out of his 16 games, he averaged 59. So he's got a 36-minute game in there that's bringing down his price. And, under the new rules, he averaged 59 and a half. minus that game. So we also, you know, suspect it's likely that there's going to be either like Will Smith or Joey Lusick on the Eels bench. So I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility he's going to be playing 60 minutes the majority of the season. And for mine, this is the reason I've opted for him over Twal is just because he's a better player. Like, I know that I don't have to worry about Brown getting his minutes chopped for performance or, you know, getting dropped or benched or whatever.
You just have to worry about him getting suspended.
Exactly. That's basically it. That's the only real worry. But what's your thoughts on Brown?
Yeah, for every player, there's always something that's going to be your area of concern. And for Brown, it is his discipline. He does find himself suspended or injured fairly regularly. But that being said, I'm a big fan of Brown. And if my team composition allows for it, I'll definitely be looking at him. It's just a matter of, for me at the moment, I've got him projected at 59 and Twal projected at 59, and I can't fit either of them in just based on where I've got the value versus some other guys. So it'll just be looking at what happens over the trials and making me feel more comfortable with some other guys that I'm considering taking a gamble on. But in the event that I decide that they're not a wise investment in terms of that gamble, then I'll probably be looking at Brown and saying, okay, you know, I know what I'm going to get from Brown, which is good scoring, and he's never going to be accused of not trying. And there's a chance that he's going to be suspended, but you know, you wear that for that upside and consistency in scoring. So yeah, definitely somebody that's on my list of players that I'm willing to put into my team, subject to what's sort of happening around them. So one of the other guys, and this is the guy who I actually do presently have in my team, and probably the one of those guys that I was talking about just now with, you know, if I'm not comfortable with their outlook for the season, I'll be looking to make them into Brown, and that's Andrew Fifita. So Andrew Fifita is currently sitting at 2.5%, so same as Twal, around that same sort of really low ownership. Obviously, Fifita did not have a very good year last year, but he still managed to average 40 points. So that tells you something about the quality of the player. You know, Fifita was a perennial gun front row forward, captaincy option for years. He is towards the end of his career. But, you know, if you look at what Fifita did last year, he was having some issues with his knees, obviously, which were sort of keeping him on the sideline more than what he'd like. But in the games where he actually managed to stay on the park for at least 40 minutes, he was still that same player. So he averaged 54 in 44 minutes across the three games that he managed to play 40 plus minutes last year. So that's a PPM of 1.25. He's definitely still got it. It's just a matter of whether he can sustain it. So last year, obviously, there was that article that came out recently where Fifita was sitting at, what, 135 kilos or something like that, and he's down to 121 now. So, you know, anyone that's got joint issues will know that losing 20 kilos can do wonders for reducing your joint issues. And the big thing with Fifita is I'm not asking him to go back to playing 65 minutes in order to be a value. Really, all I'm asking for is for him to be able to play 40 to 45 minutes a game.
Yeah. Wow. You really have been playing mad scientist. yeah, he's obviously, you know, a gun of years past. I don't know I'm feeling a little bit more risk averse. I don't know, like, because in years past, we've seen he's pumped out, you know, 30s, like scores in the 30s when he's been playing 60 minutes. So, like, what's going to happen if he has one of those games when he's playing 40 minutes?
Sure. But I mean, the thing is for that as well, you know, you look at him, if he knows what his role is going to be, he's going to have to play 80 minutes. You know, I remember a couple of years ago, we were sitting there watching him. I think Wade Graham was injured and Gallen was injured and he was the captain and he was playing 80 minutes pretty much every week. And you could see him, he was basically just walking up and down the field because he knew that he had to be on the park the whole time. Whereas I think if he knows that his role is go out there and just rip him to shreds for 40 to 45 minutes, he can do that. So let me just read you out something here. So the three games from last year where he played 43, 43, and 44 minutes. He made between 20 and 30 tackles, which, you know, is pretty good. So let's give him 25 points for that. But then the worst amount of tackle busts that he had was 4. Even on a 70, he only ran for 70 meters against the Raiders and still did 4 tackle busts and 4 offloads. So it's just, and the thing is, it's not smart football, but, you know, it's what the Sharks are going to need from him. And, you know, the way that the game's moving, they want to play that ad lib, fast pace, Fifita to get the ball, run up to the line, do a couple of crab runs and then chuck it out the back to somebody. And, you know, he's still 119 kilos. He's so hard to tackle and he doesn't need to do it for 80 minutes. He only needs to do it for 40 minutes. His career average, and this is across at least 25 games here that I'm looking at, his career average when he plays between 40 minutes and 50 minutes. So not, you know, not 50 plus, his career average between those two amounts of minutes is 58 points in 47 minutes, which is just, it's absurd. But that PPM sustained 1.25 is sustained across, that's from 2014 to 2020, those games. So it's not like he's diminished at all. It was 1.25 in 2020. So he can definitely still do it. It's just a matter of, can he stay on the park? And, you know, for me, I'm looking at that risk versus reward and I'm looking at a guy priced at 40 who can average 57 versus say a guy like Nathan Brown priced at 55 is projecting to be 59. You know, you're talking about 15 extra points worth of money that you can spend somewhere else there. So I realize that's not, it's not a conservative approach and, you know, I wouldn't begrudge anybody for not doing it, but you know, if we come out, watch that All-Stars game and Fifita's just absolutely ripping them to shreds and manages to play big minutes, then, you know, if he came out and just absolutely wrecked everybody, would you be in?
I mean, it depends how many, you know, crappy offloads he's throwing out the back. dumping them on the ground at those garbage points.
There's guaranteed to be at least 93 offloads in that game. You watch. I'm excited.
I like Matt Mark. I like Matt Scientist Mark. If I'm in a pinch, I'd be willing to give it a go.
Plus, he's fun to watch. You know, and
yeah, that is true.
You know, when you're watching a Sharks game, you're like, "Where's Fifita? Give him the ball so I can watch him throw the worst offload you've ever seen." But 3 points, 3 points, 3 points. That's all we want. And he's not going to play Origin, definitely. So, I mean, you take him. Imagine that you buy Fifita all the way through to, you know, 55 points or whatever, and then after Origin, you turn him into an absolute gun. Assuming that he can survive that long, you know, but you know, it is obviously a risk. So, you know, and that's why these guys are so low ownership, because they are risks. But you know, you look at the downside, what's the downside really? He averaged 40 last year, you know, and he was barely on the park. So, you know, worst case scenario, he sustains his scoring and you got a 40 point guy that you paid at value for, which is not what you want, but there's not really a downside there, you know? All right. So the next guy here is on the opposite end of the age spectrum and definitely on the way up, and that's Keon Kolomatungi for the Rabbitohs. So we're expecting Kolomatungi to get edge back row spot, even though he's only listed at mid at the moment. But, you know, Kolomatungi, he's 385K and he's at 2.3% as well, which is just insane. Ryan, tell us about Kolomatungi.
Yeah, so the koala, as I call him.
Koala.
He had 5 second row starts in 2019 in reserve grade. He had an average of 45.5 in 69 minutes. And of those 5 second row starts, 4 of them, he had at least 60 minutes. And that came out for an average of 49.5 in 76 minutes. So I think if he plays 80, he's a good chance to average 50. But we also know that Bennett, you know, occasionally likes to play a young second row for only 60. So I think, you know, even with only getting 60 minutes, I think he'll average 40, and I think there's upside there to 50 if his minutes do increase. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. I found exactly the same. And the thing you need to remember with those scoring as well is that was on the old rules. You know, if you look at last year, his games where he played sort of a decent amount of minutes. So in the games where he played at least 40 minutes last year, which is a 5 games. So obviously we prefer to use a bigger cross-section than this, but the 5 games where he played at least 40 minutes, he averaged 38 in 46 minutes. So that's a really healthy PPM. I think a lot of that was through the middle, but typically players like this don't necessarily drop off too much when they go out to the edge. So, I mean, even if you put him at 0.7, which is sort of an attacking style back rower, he's still going to, you know, make some good price rises there. And I'm expecting him to have at least 10 points of value, but probably closer to 15 plus. So, yeah, definitely I'm really excited about Colin Matangi. Now, obviously, there is a chance that Wayne Bennett decides that he wants to use Jacob Hoste, but I honestly don't see that happening. It may be that Murray starts on the edge for the first 20 minutes and then Colin Matangi comes on and plays the last 60. That's something that we might need to have a look at in Charity Shield. But that probably wouldn't dissuade me as long as we know that Colin Matangi is actually going to be the one who comes on and plays the balance of those minutes at 55 to 60 minutes. It probably would make me look at him versus some other guys in the range that we're going to talk about a little bit later, like Davey and Ricky, and go, okay, well, you know, Colin Matangi is the most expensive of those. But he'll also should get the DPP once he's named at the back row as well. So definitely a fan of Colin Matangi. Did you have anything to add to that?
No, I think you summed it up well.
Yeah, cool. Another guy, 246K, really interested in him at 3.3% ownership's Peter Holler. So Peter Holler seems to be flying under the radar a little bit in terms of what people are expecting out of the Cowboys 17. So earlier in the year, I think it might have even been late last year, they did an interview with Peter Holler and they basically said that he said that they were looking to trim him down and have him play on the edge rather than in the middle. So for those of you that aren't familiar with Peter Holler, he was touted as the next Tomalolo and sort of still is. He's a big boy. He's, you know, he's 190 centimeters odd and 110 kilo, even playing at his new sort of playing size. And he's an absolute massive human. So you imagine a guy like that out on the edge causing some terror. I remember Tomalolo started as an edge player as well. So Holler's definitely done that trim down now, and any sort of doubt of him not getting that role should be removed now that Gilbert, and not that I thought Gilbert was going to get it anyway, because he's a middle, not an edge player. But Holler looks in good stead now to pick up an edge back row spot at 246K. He seems like he should be an absolute no-brainer at 3.3%.
Yeah, I mean, you're our resident Cowboys fanatic. What are you sort of projecting for him? I only managed to find three Q Cup starts where he started in the second row for 52 minutes and an average of 34.
Yeah.
Do you think he could replicate like a 40 sort of average in first row?
Yeah, mate. Well, I mean, the big thing is we're not necessarily looking for him to break all the scoring records. You know, I would say the best way to look at him would be to look at what Katoa from the Warriors did last year. They're a similar style player. They're a middle edge sort of hybrid or whatever, big humans, young guys, big engines. That's what I'd sort of be expecting. I'd be expecting somewhere between, you know, say a 30 on a bad day to a 50 plus on a good day, and probably an average in the high 30s, early 40s, with, you know, sometimes playing 80 minutes, sometimes not playing 80 minutes, just depending on sort of how the game's going. I know they've said that they're looking to reduce Tomalolo's minutes this year. They do have a lot of guys who can play a good chunk of minutes at the Cowboys though. So if Holler's getting 60 plus minutes, ultimately, he's probably not somebody that I want to have in my 17 from day dot, just because I sort of don't really know what to expect from him. But I'm happy to have him, say, as my 18th man or 19th man, depending on who you prefer out of him and Sean Bloor. And then assuming that he's gone absolutely ham, you can work out who's your most sucky person in your first 17 and put a Holler up to start. So, yeah, I'm sort of not really thinking too hard about that one. If he starts on an edge at 246K, it's sort of a... it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, so won't spend too much time on here. Now, Ryan, the next guy here is somebody that I've spent a bit of time looking at, and I'm not 100% there on him. So I'm really interested to hear what you have to say on him, which is Spencer Lenu at 307K. So tell me a little bit about where you are at with Spencer.
People are going to get sick of us agreeing too much. I was a lot higher on him until I started looking into him for the podcast.
So what you're saying is you were talking out of your ass. And now you're not sure.
He averaged 32 in 47 minutes in reserve grade. So it's not a great PPM. It's 0.7. We saw, you know, last year in 2019 in first grade, he wasn't playing big minutes. He averaged 21 in 21 minutes. So that's a PPM of one, but sustaining a PPM of one is a lot easier in 20 minutes than it is playing 40 plus. I think he's probably, I mean, if he's getting about, you know, a little bit over 40 minutes, he's probably going to go close to that 10 points of value, but it seems a bit more of a risk than what I would like for a 307K player.
Yeah. Well, you know, you're looking at his break even of 30, of 23. So at a minimum, you'd be looking for him to average 33, but ideally better. You know, typically the cheaper somebody is, the more value you'd sort of be hoping for out of them. So at a bare minimum, I'd be wanting him to average 35, which means he needs to play 35 minutes. So the avenue to that happening for him is him splitting an 80-minute prop spot with Moses Leota, where they play about 40 minutes each and average about 40 points each, or 35 to 40 points each. And, you know, I'm looking at him versus, say, you know, a guy like Holler and a guy that we're about to talk about in Stefano. You're paying 70K, and I'm not 100% sure what you're getting for that 70K.
Yeah, I mean, and that's a fair call, especially, you know, with his minutes increasing, it's hard to say that his PPM will stay at one. I don't know. I think it's pretty hard to maintain when you're going from 20 minutes up to 40. You're going to be expelling a lot more of your stamina. Yeah, I don't know. For someone at 307K, I shouldn't be having this much doubt with, and maybe that's a sign.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, there's a lot of really good options in this little 370, 380 down to 240K bracket there that you do sort of need to be a little bit fussy with them. And, you know, you say you look at 70K less for a guy like Hola. That seems like a no-brainer to me. But then 70K more and you get to a guy like Colin Matangi, who seems to have a lot more upside. And I just sort of don't really know whether he's sort of in the middle of two types of players, and I don't really see him being the best of either type. So, you know, definitely not that interested in Spencer Lenier at the moment. So on that note, though, Stefano for the Tigers, and I'm not even going to try and pronounce his last name because I've done it a couple of times, but I don't necessarily feel confident with it. So, but Stefano, obviously he's coming in at 246K, across from the Panthers, not from the Panthers, across from the Eels last year. He only managed to get three games where he just touched the field for 0 points, but, you know, 1 minute. And then he had two games of 10 and 13 minutes, and he scored 14 in both of those games, which is pretty promising. So he had 11 tackles and 40 meters, and then he had 6 tackles and 50 meters with a tackle bust. So, you know, that's pretty good start for a young guy. So we can see that he does sort of get just rip in and sort of get to work by the looks of this. He had 11 tackles in 10 minutes against Manly. So what are your thoughts on Stefano and with the Tigers? You know, are you, what sort of minutes would you think he'd be getting?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to predict. You were, you know, talking about the Tigers rotation before, you'd expect he could, you know, be getting anywhere between 20 and 40 on a given week. I don't know. He only needs maybe 30 to 35 minutes, I think, to be having 10 points of value there. What do you think? Do you think he gets that 35 minutes again?
Yeah, I think so. So if you look at what James Taimu did last year, this is sort of the slot. I'm expecting Stefano to play the opposite 80 to Taimu in sort of their rotation, with McKaylee and Ofengawi splitting the other one. So Taimu only played about 44 minutes on average last year. So, you know, even if he stretches that to 47, 48, because they need him to potentially, then, you know, you're still looking at 30 to 35 minutes pretty comfortably with upside if there's an injury as well. So, I definitely think he's somebody that you can look to put into your 21. I'd probably have him below Hola. The thing is there, you got here, you know, you look at your emergencies, you got Hola, you got Bloor, Laurie, and Stefano is probably the four guys that I'm really interested in at the moment. And he's only at 8.4%. So he's I'm a lot further up the list than these other guys, but definitely somebody that I'll be looking at, assuming that they end up with Mbai on the bench with a, like, if the bench is Stefano, McKaylee, Garner, and Mbai, I'll be all in. So yeah, it's a 4-4, yeah. Probably not so much, but yeah, definitely if that's the bench for sure.
Yeah, no, I definitely have Stefano above Lino as well. Like, I know we love to talk about reserve grade stats, but for Stefano, he had a 37.5 average in 44 minutes. So that's a PPM of 0.85 compared to Lino's of 0.7.
Yeah.
It's a lot easier to swallow in the fact that, he doesn't need as many minutes to make his break even. So,
yeah.
Plus, a little bit less.
Yeah, plus you got to add the new rules into those as well. So that 8.5's on the old scoring system. Stefano's a big mobile Haas style prop as well. So definitely potential there that he might, if Tamu's starting to get a little bit older, even it might be, they might split at 40-40, and he could be looking at a 35 average and a really nice sort of money maker on your emergencies there. So the next guy on the list here, Pauasa Faamasili. So he's come across from the Roosters via the loan to the Warriors last year, and he's now a Dragon. So they mentioned him on the Talking League podcast with the assistant coach of the Dragons, Matthew Elliott, who compared him to Ruben Wiki. Ryan, where are you at with Faamasili?
Yeah, he's an exciting option, I think, especially with the unfortunate McInnes injury yesterday. I think he's bolted into contention for a starting spot in round one. He's priced at 22. He had six games last year where he played at least 30 minutes, and it came out for an average of 30 points in 37 minutes.
Yeah.
So a PPM of 0.83. So say we're being conservative, starting prop or lock, gets 40 minutes a game, for instance.
Yeah.
I think he's averaging about 33. Side. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think he'd be averaging 33. And if we want to be a little bit more aggressive, like say he's getting 50 minutes, I think he could average around 41. So I think there's a lot of upside there with Faamasili.
Yep, absolutely. And he's another one that's been sort of in and out of my team, just subject to what I can do with my salary cap. So depending on what he's looking at, I think he's probably, it seems to me like he might be battling with the next guy potentially for the starting lock spot. And that is Daniel Alvaro. Faamasili is at 1.9% and he's priced at 296K. Alvaro is at 1.3, priced at 293K. So they're almost identical in price, except the plus for Alvaro is A, we've seen him play regular first grade before, and we know, and the Dragons will know exactly what they're going to get out of him, which is a sturdy influence in the middle of the field with a fantastic work rate. He looked really good in the trial yesterday. Unfortunately, Faamasili didn't play. Obviously, we'll be looking at that team list come round one, or even the Charity Shield's probably the big thing for them, isn't it? So if we look at the Charity Shield and whoever's that starting lock there, definitely is looking at, I would expect more than 40 minutes, and whichever one of those it is, you definitely want to be plugging them in, I would think, to your team. If it's Alvaro, I would say you must get him. If it's Faamasili, I'd say he's still a really good option, but maybe not a must. Alvaro's PPM is well over one. So, he could be 20 points of value at 40 minutes based on his price at the moment. Ryan, we were talking off air a little bit earlier about Alvaro. One of our friends had him as a pod in 2018, and yeah, he was playing like 40 minutes and scoring like 50 something points a game.
Yeah, he's just an absolute PPM machine that year, and he seemed like in 2018 he averaged 51 in 46 minutes. So, like, that's insane. It's really strange that since then, like, a lot of coaches just don't seem to rate Alvaro. Like, he's just never really been given an opportunity outside of.
I think with the loss of McInnes, maybe they might be looking for a steadying influence and a bit of experience on the park. Obviously, they're going to be looking at having a rookie edge back rower in Jackson Ford. They're going to be using Josh Kerr a lot more. They're going to be using, Blake Laurie, who's not he's got a couple of seasons under his belt now, but he's not a seasoned campaigner by any stretch. So, that, if they're looking for that guy to fill that McInnes lock role, Alvaro's probably the closest thing they have on their roster at the moment. So it'll be really interesting to see how that all shakes out. And I'm sort of keeping one eye on the Dragons at the moment, although I'm not very excited about their season outlook at the moment. So the next guy is on a team who I am actually very excited about their season outlook, and that is Jai Arrow for the South Sydney Rabbitohs. So he comes in at 604K, so break even of 45. Owned by 5.1% of teams. Arrow's sort of somebody who's, I think for me, he's an interesting option. He's by no stretch like a must-have or a, you know, a flying under the radar awesome option. But, you know, for me, if I'm not looking to, it's like, let's say I plug Fifita into my team and then we get to the trial and he's not looking very good, or, you know, I'm not really sure about what to expect from him, paying an extra 60K takes me up to Arrow without disrupting my team too much. And, you know, we look at Arrow's past performances, and outside of last year, he's always been considered to be a fantasy gun. So, you know, if we were starting 2020 and we didn't know what was going to happen in 2020 and Arrow was priced at 600K, everybody would have been buying him. So what's changed between this year and last year?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think his performances last year were a little bit underwhelming. Maybe that was just because of, you know, the role he was being used in, coming off the bench, not playing as many minutes as what he's used to. He's admittedly one I haven't had in my team in all this preseason. And he's also struggled with a little bit of a hamstring injury as well. I don't know. I'm a little bit skeptical just looking at him.
Let me put it to you this way, right? So the Rabbitohs team's more than likely going to be Arrow at prop, Murray at lock, then Colin Matangi and Jaden Sewer on the edges, with the other prop spot being one of Totola and, is it George Burgess is the one who's still there? Tom's still there. With, you know, that last forward spot on the bench probably being what's his name? Mark Nichols or one of these sorts of guys, right? So we're expecting that Colin Matangi is probably going to play about 60 minutes. We're expecting Murray's probably going to spend 20 minutes of his 60 odd minutes on the field out on the edge. And then you've got Jai Arrow there, who's more than likely going to be soaking, why I would suggest, somewhere between 50 and 60 minutes at prop would be my sort of suggestion. So based on what we've seen from Wayne Bennett, he has one of his props that he likes to use for big minutes. So in State of Origin, it was Josh Papali. Expecting that at the Rabbitohs, it'd have to be expecting that an Origin quality prop such as Jai Arrow is going to be commanding at least 50 minutes per game. And just having a look at his past seasons outside of 2020, say in 2019, we were doing this exercise and, you know, we gave Jai Arrow a pass on 2020 because, you know, it was obviously he wasn't seeing eye to eye with Holbrook for whatever reason. Jai Arrow in 2019 in the games where he played between 50 and 70 minutes, so at an average of 59.6 minutes, he averaged 56 points. And that would be on the old style play. So that's without even the sort of the next step up in the rules being, you know, adding some extra base stats into that. So, you know, we could have been baking that into it and saying, well, he might have averaged 60 if he was playing the way that he was playing in 2019. You know, you look at some players just don't like playing for certain coaches or whatever, for whatever reason, they don't agree with them. But, you know, Arrow's been picked by Bennett in State of Origin. He was his player at the Broncos and they were dirty that they lost him to the Titans in the first place. So looking at Arrow, it's entirely possible he could bounce back to form and be a 55 plus average player. The year before in 2018, using the same criteria between 50 and 70 minutes, his average was 59.1 in 59 minutes.
Yeah, it's quite funny because I've just been looking at his 2018 and 2019 stats and his PPM was close to one. And in 2020, it dropped off like under the new rules. So yeah, maybe Bennett will be able to get him back and get that PPM back closer to one, especially under these new rules. It's surprising that it went backwards.
Yeah, absolutely. I really think that was a Titans Holbrook thing more than it was an Arrow thing. And I mean, that's the gamble that you're going to have to make if you decide you want to have a look at Jai Arrow. Yes, he did have a little bit of a hamstring injury, but, you know, they sort of said he'll be right by round one. He's a professional and he's still pretty young really too. So he's got a lot of opportunity there. You know, they've paid him big money to come across. So you have to expect that he's going to be used in the right way. He's only 25, so, you know, he's still got plenty of time. And, you know, he's got two seasons under his belt prior to 2020 with well over 55 point averages under 60 minutes. So, you know, it's not like we're asking him to go back to an 80 minute lock role, and nobody's expecting that. But, you know, it's well within the realms of possibility that he might average over 55 this year, and he's currently priced at 45. He's certainly a lot less risky than a guy like Fifita, but I'd say maybe less upside. So you're relying on a lot more minutes from Arrow to get the same scoring. So yeah, it's definitely one to look at. Just a matter of whether or not you trust that he's going to be able to secure 55 to 60 minutes a game and go back to his role that he was playing, and Bennett's going to be able to get the best out of him. So the next guy on our list here, Ryan Madison. Ryan, tell me about your namesake, Ryan Madison, at 5.2%.
Yeah, we all know that anyone with the name Ryan's a good bloke. Unless you're a Tigers fan, then maybe you feel differently. yeah, no, Ryan Madison, he's a blue chipper. You know, we know he's going to be a gun. He's going to be a good captaincy option round one. And there's also a tiny bit of value there. He's priced at 60, but he also did have that, you know, that injury game where he only played 15 minutes and scored five. So if you want to take that out, he averaged 63.7, just below 64 last year. His lowest score was 52. So, I mean, that's a great floor there. And he only scored three tries throughout the season. So, yeah, I think there's quite a bit of upside there with Matto.
Mate, the little cherry in there as well is if you isolate out the games in round one and two where they were playing on the old rules and just play from round three onwards, it was actually over 65, his average. So.
Well, that's exciting.
It is exciting. So Maddo's currently sitting in my team. I don't have the C on him. I've got the C on Mr. James Tedesco at the moment, but he's definitely a strong vice captain or captain option for round one. And I'm 100% with you. I actually have him in over Angus Crichton at the moment because I'm looking at them seeing a similar outlook, and I can redistribute that 26K better, I think. So yeah, he's sort of sitting on my team. So
yeah, I agree. I actually think Madison's a better option than Angus, just for that reason.
Yeah. And you know, the Roosters are notoriously slow starters, which could be bad for my Tedesco. I might even put the C on Maddo just because I know he's going to get me 50. Whereas, you know, Teddy could get 29 or he could get 129, and I don't know which. Whereas I know Maddo is going to give me 55 to 65. And then if he gets a try, which, you know, is entirely possible considering that they are playing against the Broncos in round one, I definitely think that he's an awesome option, and he hasn't been a state of origin player, and I don't see him displacing the current guys, even though he's an origin quality guy. I reckon we need to test his eligibility. I reckon he might have been born in Stanthorpe and he should be playing for Queensland. What do you think?
Yeah, no, definitely. I think where he was born, he's definitely a Queenslander.
That's in Queensland. Have you seen that YouTube video?
No, I don't think I have.
Okay. Everybody go and look it up on YouTube, where there's people getting mad about, you know, like, this guy's from Tonga. That's in Queensland. Yeah, so it's quite funny. Anyway, next on our list, Jackson Ford. So Jackson Ford graced us with his talents in the trial last night. I would go so far as to say he was unimpressive. Ryan, you actually brought up an interesting stat to me off air, an interesting thought. So when we discussed Jackson Ford in the positional on the team-by-team analysis, we sort of highlighted him as a good option. And then as the season or the off-season's drawn closer to round one, we've sort of become less and less excited by Ford. Obviously, his three starts last year, two of which were quite poor and then one good one. But his reserve grade stats is sort of what we were highlighting from him being why he was a good option. But the interesting stat, you tell everybody about your interesting stat. I won't steal your thunder.
Yeah, we've highlighted, you know, his impressive reserve grade average, and he scored a lot of tries. But something I was looking at the other day, in 2018, the Dragons reserve grade side finished second, and in 2019, they were minor premiers. So, I mean, going from minor premiers to probably the favourites for the wooden spoon this year, I'm thinking he might not get the same attacking opportunity. And in reserve grade, like even with those great attacking stats, he still averaged over 10 in minus 10 in negatives per game. So if you take away, you know, those tries, we've already highlighted he doesn't mind a missed tackle. So if you're keeping in the missed tackles and removing a few tries, yeah, I don't know. I'm a little bit less excited. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, no, I'm 100% with you, and I'm sorry to all the listeners that Ryan and I are agreeing on most of these. I know you were hoping for some fireworks after we almost ended up in a brawl last week over over some of the players. But
Mate, Pappenhausen, mate, is he in your team this week?
There's a guy in a purple jersey sitting in my wing fullback spot, but I'm not prepared to confirm or deny whether his name rhymes with Trappenhausen or not. So, mate, Jackson Ford, coming back to Ford, because I don't want to talk about Pappenhausen anymore. I am projecting him optimistically for 40 as an average, and he's priced at 33. So that doesn't meet my criteria. And, you know, you look at guys like Andrew Davey, Colin Matungi, Jordan Rickey, you can project them all for 40, but they're all 100K or at least 70 or 80K cheaper. So, you know, by that logic, you sort of can't really justify getting Ford. The only reason why you'd get him is because of the dual position. But then even then, between, you know, you got a Rickey and a Colin Matungi, you've got both positions covered. You've got Connor Watson who covers mid. You've got, you know, all sorts of options there. So I don't necessarily see any reason why anybody would start with Ford after doing that, unless you are a Dragons fan and you think the Dragons are going to be the premiers this year, in which case, you know, he could average 50 something. But I think if that's the case, you probably need to reevaluate that, because they're going to be very bad this year. Speaking of Andrew Davey, he's the next guy on our list here. So he's at 7.7%. So Ford was at 8.7, but Davey's at 7.7. And he is 364K. So, Ryan, what's your thoughts on Andrew Davey?
Yeah, he seems like one that's flying under the radar. Like, we think he's probably going to be nabbing that starting edge role for Manly. And maybe when that does happen round one, his ownership will skyrocket from there. But we were surprised to see him under 8% currently. He had two edge starts in 2020. He's managed a 52 and 80 minutes and a 53 and 70, which is quite exciting. And he had another game when Madison, you know, copped his head knock. He played 51 minutes and scored 27. So, I mean, it's a pretty good PPM, and it sort of matches up to what he was doing in reserve grade between Queensland Cup and New South Wales Cup. He averaged 43 and 77 minutes. So, like you were saying, projecting him at 40, I don't think it's unrealistic at all if he's playing 80 minutes.
Yeah, mate, I've got him down for 45 in an 80-minute role, which makes him, 18 points of value and firmly in the need to strongly consider why you wouldn't have him in your team at that point. The only thing that I'm looking at with, you know, if I'm looking at three guys, say I'm looking at Colin Matungi, Rickey and Davey, and I only have spots for two of them, Davey seems to me like the one with the smallest upside of those three. He's got the most certain role. So I think with those other two, Rickey and Colin Matungi, there's a chance that they might not play the 80 minutes and they might only play 60. But I also think that they have the highest upside, the best, you know, attacking ability, whereas Davey seems to me like a bit more of a toiler. So that would be the only thing where I would sort of look at it and sort of try to work out which one of those I was going to go with. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I was actually surprised when I was looking up Andrew Davey. He's actually 29. Like, he's been around for quite a while. He's been this guy that's jumped around from reserve grade to reserve grade side, and he's finally getting his opportunity now, like very late on his career.
And I mean, you might look at that and see that as a good thing or a bad thing, depending on how you want to sort of slant it. I mean, you look at being 29, he's obviously worked really hard to get there, and you think he's going to absolutely bust his ass to make sure he doesn't lose anything out of that spot. You know, so you might look at that as a big plus for him to be, making sure that he's going to be absolutely working his butt off to make sure he doesn't get dropped. So I think he's definitely a really good option, and I'll be definitely trying to work out how I can get him into my 17, assuming that it looks optimistic for him to play 80 minutes. So the next guy on our list here is George Williams at 642K. So interesting stat we highlighted through the week on the social media with George Williams is that when he, we spoke about Jack Whiten and that the fact that he actually averaged something, it was more than 10 points more when Josh Hodgson was out injured. There's actually an inverse relationship with that with George Williams, who actually scored about 6 points on average better with Josh Hodgson in the side, despite actually scoring less tries on a per game basis. So the 8 games where Hodgson played, he only scored one try and averaged almost 54 points. But then in the, you know, 9 or 10 games, I think it was 9 games without Hodgson, he averaged like 47 and he had 3 tries across those 9 games. So, you know, it's a pretty significant difference when you consider that it's not like, you know, sometimes you look at that and go, oh yeah, the tries were skewing the stats. But in fact, the tries skewed it to make it look less of a gap, if that makes sense. So, I mean, obviously in that price bracket, you got Cam Munster there at 671, who everybody's going absolutely nuts for. He's up at 24.2% ownership, whereas Williams is only 2.something% ownership. So, you know, if you're looking at your team and you're trying to work out, hey, I need to make 30 grand from somewhere in order to get this guy instead of that guy who's, you know, I'm projecting to be 10 points better or 5 points better, you know, you might be looking at the trade-off now that we are pretty sure that Pappenhausen is going to be doing the goal kicking. You know, that brings Munster's projection down for me to 56, and I have Williams at about 54. So it's just whether that 2 points, that he's about 2 points more expensive and 2 points more average. You know, I'm looking at my team at the moment. I don't have any Raiders players, whereas I've got a Melbourne Storm player other than Munster. So maybe it's, hey, I need that 30K. I want to get a little bit more exposure to a team. I don't have any players at the moment. Where are you at on George Williams? I just talked a lot and I actually didn't ask you what you thought.
Yeah, he's one that came out of the left field for me. I wasn't expecting you to go deep diving on George Williams. But yeah, I mean, some interesting stats that you bring up. And, you know, it's a decent sample too. Like Josh Hodgson played like 8.5 games before he got injured last year with Williams.
Mm.
Especially when you factor in that Williams looks like he's going to be taking on the goal kicking to start the year, depending on how long Jared Croker's out for.
I honestly did not even factor that in because I think it's only like 1 or 2 weeks. So there's no goal kicking in any of that.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, I don't know. I wonder what that reason is. Like, is it like what, like the difference between playing with Hodgson and playing with Starling?
Mate, it's the English connection.
Hmm.
Yeah. No, I think, because I think what happened is when they did their original plan to start the year, obviously you got Hodgson in the middle who plays a little bit like a halfback and he's, you know, evenly distributing the ball and sort of trying to, you know, make sure that the offense is running on both sides of the field. So then Hodgson went down and they were playing a little bit more sort of up-tempo, off-the-cuff sort of stuff with Starling. And his natural thing would be to go to the side that's got those players that complement that attacking style, which is Jack Whiten. So, you know, they then go to their next best playmaker, which is Whiten. So Williams, instead of being the, you know, the complementary piece, was sort of Whiten was the focus of the offense, and Williams was still doing pretty well. Like, he still averaged 46 point something. So like, it wasn't a bad average, but the focus definitely went away from him. So I think what happened is the player would get tackled and they play the ball to Starling and Williams would yell out, but because of his English accent, Starling didn't know what the hell he was talking about. So he just passed it to Whiten because he's like, he couldn't understand him. I think that's what it was. So hopefully with an extra year of being in Australia, his accent, he'll get a little bit more Australian sounding. And Hodgson already speaks Pommy, so he'll be able to understand him. So hopefully you'd be able to pass in the ball. But no, in all seriousness, I do think it's just that they were rolling the offense with Whiten. And, you know, you look at some of the teams that they played on the back half there. There was a couple of just absolute lay down Missouris. So, you know, I'm just pulling it up now to give you the last little bit of the season for the Raiders last year. So they played Cowboys, who really weren't very good, then the Panthers, who were good, but then they played the Broncos, the Titans, the Bulldogs, the Dragons and the Warriors all towards the end of the season there, with just one game against the Roosters in between there. And that was the stretch that I'm talking about where Williams was scoring less and they were basically just running rampant down that left-hand side. So that's sort of where I think it all sort of went a little bit astray. Whereas, you know, with the Raiders, when they've got Hodgson in there, they're a little bit more calculated and balanced, and that's playing more towards Williams. So I definitely am going to consider looking at him once we know that definitely Munster doesn't have the goal kicking, just because obviously, like, there's no doubt that Munster's a better player than Williams. And, you know, maybe it's just my, the pod hunter in me, but yeah, I'm sort of looking at, you know, whether I can do something with that extra 30K that is going to net me more points than Munster. Plus, there's no danger of George Williams playing Origin, although he might be from Queensland. So, yeah, so, I mean, that's something to keep an eye out. It could be an anti-pod, which is, you know, obviously where, you know, like if Munster scores, you know, 75 over the first, like average over the first 3 or 4 weeks and George Williams gets like 50, and then you're kicking yourself because the 25% of people that have Munster are laughing at you for being an idiot for not picking him. So, you know, there is a risk there, obviously, but at 2.3% versus 24.2% or whatever Munster is, it's definitely worth having a look at, considering how well he did at the start of the last year against some pretty good teams. So, you know, to start off the year last year, they had the Storm, the Knights, who were playing pretty well. They did play the Titans. They did play Titans, Warriors, Tigers, Manly, and then they played the Eels and the Dragons before. So actually there was a couple. When did the Raiders actually play the difficult teams last year? It seems like they just had a sprinkling of Storm, Panthers, whatever, Rabbitohs, Roosters, and then the rest of the team, they were just getting to beat up on the bottom eight for their whole thing. But the start for this season, that the Raiders have Tigers, Cronulla, Warriors to start the year. What is this?
Are you saying there's a Canberra bias?
There is a conspiracy. We need to check Peter Volandis' passport. Is he from Canberra? I tell you, shocking.
I think Ricky Stewart's got his fingers in some yep. bias down there.
Must do, yeah. No, so, yeah, that's one to keep an eye out anyway if you're looking for a pod in the halves and you're not wanting to go with Munster. Another guy here who might be a little bit of a pod in the halves is Luke Brooks at 3.6% ownership at 544K. So Brooks comes into the season priced in the very low 40s, so 41 points after coming off an average of 40.6 last year. So obviously Brooks had a terrible year last year. He spent a bit of time coming off the bench. So if we just sort of look at the games where he actually managed to start in the halves last year, and we can actually take out his games where he didn't come off the bench, we're already seeing an average of 44.5. So that's a boost of 3.5 on his break even. Also, obviously, we know he was playing with Benji Marshall last year, where he's going to be playing more than likely with Adam Dewey in the halves this year. So you think his kick meters, they're not going to go, he's not going to be getting bloody Lachlan Lewis 500 kick meters a game level, but you know, he only averaged 230 kick meters last year. I'd expect that to probably be closer to 330. So if you're looking at an extra 5 points there, you're at 49.5. And he absolutely played terribly last year. So there is a pathway here for Brooks to be a cut price keeper, depending on how you feel, I guess, how you feel about the Tigers. So Ryan, how do you feel about the Tigers?
I'm feeling pretty lukewarm, you know, a little bit ninth about them.
a little bit ninth?
yeah, for mine, Brooks, he's a little bit like awkwardly priced. Like there's some guys in like the 400K range I'd much rather take a punt on that I think will average similarly to Brooksy. Okay. He's really only ever had that like one good season where he's averaged over 50, and that was in 2019. So yeah, I don't know how to really feel about him. I think there's just other guys I'd take a punt on, and yeah.
Okay, so can I throw something at you here, right? So when he started at halfback as opposed to starting at 5/8 last year, when he started at halfback, he averaged 48.4. When he started at 5/8, he averaged 34.8.
Interesting.
Yeah. So his kick meters during that time, so it's 180 as the 5/8 versus 250. So that's 70 kick meters. So what's that? 3.5 points. So that still only makes him 45. So it's still a 10-point bump there. He did get 4 tries in the 10 games that he played at halfback. But, you know, I think there's something to be said for that, because Brooks has, he's traditionally actually has been a running, and he has managed to actually score some tries. You know, if you look at 2019, just for example, he's, you know, he still had a 0.2 try scoring rate. So, and if you look at 2018, it was 0.2. So, you know, you take off two of those tries and you'd spread the average out, you'd still probably still be at a 42, 43 average with 250 kick meters there. So as opposed to 34. So you are talking about a 7 or 8 point bump there. Brooks seems to me to be one of the most obvious examples of a confidence player. So, you know, they talk about confidence players, but what does that actually sort of mean? Like, you know, you look at this here, he's obviously running the ball here. He's got 90 run meters as the halfback and, yeah, 85. So that's not much of a difference. But there's one outlier game in there where he had 150 run meters. So he probably just made one big breakaway run there. But outside of that, there was all pretty sort of around the 50, 60 meters mark. Yeah, it's an interesting phenomenon here. Mind you, he had 300 plus run meter games in this 10 here. So, I mean, if he's running the ball, there's no secret that the edges are going to be where the Tigers are going to be looking to attack this year. You know, you're looking at Leilua, Sean Bloor, Roberts, Leilua, and then Norfoluma, and probably Talau out on the left wing. They've got the firepower there through the edges. If Brooks can start running the ball, and benefit from some of this attacking play, do we see the Tigers making a threat and starting well this year?
What's their schedule like?
Bad, very bad. I'm just looking at it. It's Raiders and Roosters start the year Newcastle and Parramatta before they hit the eventual 2021 premiers, the North Queensland Cowboys in round 5. Don't laugh at me. I'm allowed to have
hope. I like your optimism.
No, I don't have a lot of optimism for the Cowboys. But anyway, back to Brooksy. What do you think maybe the draw is just a little bit too much of an obstacle here?
Yeah. Again, like I said, you know, say Lachlan Lamb for 100K less, I'd much rather take that punt on a team I know is probably going to be competing for a top four spot versus, you know, this Tigers team that's coming out of the gate with a pretty hard schedule, and I'm going to be needing more scoring out of Brooks for that 10 points of value than I am at a Lamb.
Yeah. No, and that makes sense. And that's why it is a pot. It is a risk. You know, there's only at 3.6%. Munster's at 24.2. Lamb's at 13.4. So obviously a lot of teams are going to go in with Lamb and Munster to start the year. That's currently what I've got sitting in my team. But, you know, it's definitely somebody that you can have a look at if you're looking for a little bit of a, you know, a point of difference in the halves there, if you believe that the Tigers are going to be able to compete this year. And, you know, on paper, they've got a pretty good side, really. It's just there whether they can put it all together. And Brooks always plays better when he's the main half. So, you know, it's definitely if your risk tolerance is high, it's one to have a look at. Speaking of the Tigers, the next guy on our list here is was technically a Tiger, although he played many more games for other teams that weren't the Tigers, was Paul Momorowski. 3.2% ownership at 364K. Ryan, tell me about Momorowski. He's your man. 368K, sorry.
Yeah, old Momorowski, the Russian, he's off to the Panthers this year. So, you know, puts him in pretty good attacking stead already. Mm-hmm. He's 10 games in his career at centre, which we think, you know, is where he'll be playing for the Penrith Panthers if he can nudge out Brent Naden for that right centre spot. So if we take out goal kicking, because he had 2 games where he kicked 7 goals in each of them, which is pretty ridiculous, but he averaged 40 across those 10 games. So I mean, he does represent a little bit of value there. Now, looking at him, he also had 9 tries in those 10 games, which is quite a lot. Yep. So if we want to be conservative and, you know, if we want to halve that, say, you know, his try scoring rate's about, you know, 40% or 50%, which I don't think is unrealistic for a team as good as Penrith, that sort of puts him around that 36, 37 average. Like, I looked at his reserve grade average and it was only 33, which made me nervous a little bit. But I think he's improved a bit since then, and he's going into a team that we know is going to be good attacking-wise. There's not a whole lot of good centre options around, so maybe he is one to consider, because I think there is probably close to 10 points of value. Okay. I mean, we know he's not going to be getting the goal kick anytime soon. Like, he's probably third in line behind Crichton and Cleary. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, we've got the Russian this year.
Mate, I've been interested, and I've now that I've done my now that I've done my process of going through and actually putting in all the values, I couldn't see any way that I would start with Momorowski personally. I'm looking at him compared to, say, like, we know that Tessie Niu is going to be a center for the Broncos, and he's a full 100K cheaper, 105K cheaper than Momorowski. And realistically, we can look at him and I'm thinking that the difference between their averages could be 5 or less points. So I just think I'm looking at the two going, okay, I'm going to have James Roberts definitely. And then my other center spot, you know, do I spend an extra 105K to get a guy who, if he keeps up a ridiculous try scoring rate, which is possible, he might average 40, or do I take a gamble on a guy at 263K who might still average 40, although the Broncos are a bad team. So I'm not feeling that's going to happen, but you know, 33, 34 points isn't out of the question. And, you know, I can spend that 105K better elsewhere. So that's sort of where I'm at the moment. Now, obviously the annoying thing for me is I don't have Niu in my center spot because he's not available at center yet. But once that happens, once they do their TLT, post-TLT updates or whatever, I'll definitely be looking at putting Niu in there. It's disappointing because I love a pod and Niu is almost the opposite of what a pod. But I definitely think in that spot, I'm looking to spend as little money as possible in my centers. If I was going to get a guy in my centers that's not Niu there, I'd probably be looking at one of the guys that we're going to talk out a little bit later in Will Hoppawattie for the extra 30K. That's just me personally. It's definitely an option. I can see the 10 points of value. Just for my side, he's sort of in a little bit of no man's land for me.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think I'm a little bit higher on him than you, but like he's just like, you know, in that awkward sort of price range. You know, like if he was around the same price as James Roberts, I probably wouldn't even be thinking about it. Like he'd be in my team, but
yeah,
like yeah, closer to 400,000. It's really difficult to squeeze him in, especially when there's so many other good options in other positions you want, you know, money for. So yeah, I definitely wouldn't talk anyone out of having him, but at the same time, he's a little bit awkwardly priced for mine.
Yeah. Yeah, and if you didn't believe in Broncos and Tessie Niu and you wanted to get a centre to pair with him and you couldn't quite afford Hoppawattie, I think he's probably the next best option in that price bracket. I definitely would take Momorowski over Jack Byrne. But there's another guy here who's a bit of a step up again. So, you know, if you've got a little bit of extra money there, you can have a look at Brian Kelly. So Brian Kelly obviously had a pretty good year last year. He was named the best centre of the year. I think he was voted by the players as the best center, which is pretty good. And considering some of the other centers that had really good years last year, it's a pretty big compliment. He is 464K. So he's about 100K more expensive than Momorowski. But he comes in priced at 35 and sitting at 3.2% ownership as well, which is identical to Momorowski. But he actually managed to average over 40 points in the games that he played 80 minutes last year. So he averaged 42 in his games where he played over 80 minutes, which would put him firmly in the keeper center category. Do you have any, I mean, I've heard a couple of other podcasts talking about him as well. They're pretty excited about Kelly. What are your thoughts on him?
Yeah, I'm actually surprised to see his ownership so low because like before fantasy opened, like it seemed like, you know, in the fantasy lounge, a lot of people were talking him up and like the OTL boys like on their podcast, they were talking him up and it seemed like a lot of people were excited for Brian Kelly coming into this year. And now it seems like everyone's sort of just forgotten about him. Like they've jumped off, you know, like to see his ownership only at 3%. You know, that said, maybe I can understand why a lot of people don't want to spend $460,000 on a center to start the year as well. Well, so maybe that's the...
Yeah, that's basically where I'm at is I'm looking at a guy like Kelly and then I'm looking at guys like Jordan Rickey, Andrew Davey, Colin Matangi, all these guys I'm trying to fit into my team and they're all 100K less and I've got them projected for the same average as what Kelly is. So I'm going, well, you know, why don't I just cheap out of my centers and get as many of these, you know, great value guys that are 100K cheaper than Kelly into my team. And that's where I've landed with him is I just can't justify spending 460K on a center to get a 42 average when, you know, I can spend 460K on getting, you know, say a guy like Andrew Davey is going to probably average 45 and then I've got 100K to spend elsewhere. So, you know, that's where it's happened with me. It's not a slight on Kelly. It's just that I can't justify the way that I do my teams is I just go for the best, cheapest options that I can find at center and then build elsewhere. So that's seems like we're sort of in agreement with that he's a good option. If you want a gun center, I can see why you'd absolutely want, like he would be, if I was going to get a gun center, it would be Kelly. But I just don't think that that's what I want to do this year. Only a couple of guys left here, Ryan. I'm a bit sad we're going to run out of guys to talk about. But we might get stuck into Hopewadi while we're on the centers as well. So Hopewadi's one of my guys. I'm a big fan of him. Obviously, he didn't have a very good year last year at center. Prior to that, he had a really, really strong average at center. So obviously, we know that the Bulldogs were not very good last year. We're expecting, or at least I'm expecting them to be better. So in Hopewadi's four starts at centers last year, he averaged 30.3. Before shifting, did he shift at fullback? I think he did, didn't he? Yeah. Hey, I think he had an injury through the middle there, a syndesmosis or something. But in 2019, when he played at center, he averaged 43.6 points. And that wasn't with a huge try scoring rate. That was only a 0.2 try scoring rate. Obviously, we know that the Dogs weren't a very good attacking team for the last couple of years. And so, you know, he's only averaging one try every five games, yet he still managed to average 43.6. So you look at a guy like Kelly, who was 41.6, 2 points lower, and his try scoring rate was 0.4. So, you know, with a Hopewadi, you're paying 70K less. You're getting the dual position wing fullback and center, and you're getting, you know, potentially better scoring with more upside. Where are you with Hopewadi?
Yeah, I mean, I was talking to you about him last night. Like, I was kind of hoping you'd give me a bit of a hard sell on him because, like, I don't know, I'm a little bit unsure. Like, he's only really ever had that one good year at center in 2019 where he averaged 44 or 43.5.
Yeah.
Outside of that, you know, he's always been sort of like, you know, 30, like mid-30 sort of guy, like 36, 35. So, I don't know, like, are you expecting maybe, like, with Baz taking the helms and, you know, the input of Kyle Flanagan steering him around, do you think, you know, he can improve that attacking?
Yeah, and it's not just Kyle Flanagan. It's Kyle Flanagan, it's Corey Allen, it's Nick Kotrick. You know, they've got more attacking players. They are going to be, you know, boogieing up the field, you would have to imagine. You know, you've got guys like, you know, if you're running, if he's outside Avarillo, he might be asked to do a bit more ball playing, which again is even better. But even if he's outside Flanagan, you have to imagine he's going to be getting some quality ball there either. So, you know, like either way, he's either getting quality ball or giving quality ball to an Avarillo or out to Kotrick. You know, like there's a lot more options. You know, they're going to be playing a lot faster. You would have to think, you know, similar style to what Penrith played last year, maybe not the cattle to do it as well, but you know, you'd have to imagine that they're going to be looking to use their strengths, and Hopewadi's definitely one of their strengths. So I'm excited to see what he can do. That being said, he doesn't currently fit into my model of not spending any money in my centres, but he has been in and out of my team. So, you know, if I see Niu, I'm going to watch the Cowboys versus Broncos game at Redcliffe in a couple of weeks. If I watch that game and Niu sort of doesn't really give me the confidence that I need that he's going to be able to keep a job, I might just spend that extra 130K, get a guy like Hopewadi, and I know that Hopewadi's going to be in the 13 if he's fit. So, you know, worst case scenario, I'm getting a player that, you know, like you said, the year before that, his average was 37. The year before that, he didn't play in 2016 and 17 because he was on his Mormon mission thing. But then in 2015, he averaged 33. That was only one try across 10 games, though. And he was quite a lot younger then. His body's matured now. So I think the 2018, 2019 stats is where you need to have him. So I've got him projected at 40, which is halfway between the 43 and the 37. So, you know, realistically, 40 might be conservative. He might be, you know, 45. You know, I don't know. So, you know, I definitely think 40 is reasonable and priced at 29. I definitely have him up there in my list of centers.
Yeah, no, I see what you're saying. Like, and I think, like, worst case for him, he averages 35, 36, makes you a little bit of money. And the upside there is that best case, he's a cut price keeper. So, yeah, I can definitely understand why we'd want him.
Yep. Right. Valentine Holmes, 5.3%, 498K. Yeah. I think since you sent me this list of players that you wanted to talk about, you seem to be less excited about Valentine Holmes. So, why don't you tell me why you're probably not going to get him?
I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm still excited for him. Like, if he starts at fullback, he's a good buy. The problem is we don't know if he's going to start at fullback anymore. Like, a lot of us just thought it was a sure thing. Like, you know, your big marquee player, he starts at fullback, but it seems like Todd Payton doesn't care about paychecks. He's, you know, picking whoever plays the best there. And maybe that's good for the Cowboys football-wise, might not be the best for us fantasy-wise.
Yep. The old Tomalolo 50-minute bloody nail in the coffin for everybody.
Dean Payton, what are you doing? Go back to the Warriors, mate.
No, I love it. I'm so happy about it.
No, so last year, you know, Val had a few injury affected games that were dragging down his price. Like he came back from injury for a couple of games too early. And so if we only look at the first 4 weeks and the last 4 weeks when he was actually healthy, his average at fullback was 46.1. So for his current price, I think there's quite a bit of value there. Like I know you spoke about in weeks past, you thought he could be pushing, you know, a 50-point average. You know, again, as our resident Cowboys fanatic, do you think he can grab that fullback jersey? And then what are your thoughts if he does?
Yeah, well, I think at the moment, a lot of it is coming down to who they think's their best 17. So I read a quote from Todd Payton. Basically what he said was the best talker is going to be sort of the fullback. And also he's looking for guys to lead them around the park. So there's no, absolutely no doubt in my mind that the best halfback at the Cowboys is Jake Clifford. And the best 5'8 at the Cowboys is Michael Morgan. So Michael Morgan is a great player when he's on the field and he's not injured. He's having some issues with his shoulder, which is a separate thing. But Michael Morgan's a 5'8 and Jake Clifford is a halfback. And Paul Green was playing the wrong way around and they were just getting their wires crossed. And I'm really excited to see them put the 6 on Morgan's back and the 7 on Clifford's back and say, Clifford, you organize the team, direct them all around. Morgan, run the ball because that's what you're good at. It's terrible for Morgan's fantasy value, and that's why he's not on our list of pods here because I can't see any reason why he's going to be good if he's partnering Clifford, and that's where we think this is going to go. But what that means is you've got a positional battle there between Drinkwater and Holmes for the number one jersey. I'm basically going to – I don't want to guarantee that it's not going to be Hamiso, but I think that between Holmes and Drinkwater, there's the number one's going to be there. And then that then makes the positional battles outside, you know, they might, the thing is, you know, it's the state of origin philosophy almost of get your best 17 players and then work out what jersey they're going to be wearing. You know, if you do that for the Cowboys, it's Drinkwater at fullback, Holmes on the wing, and then Hamiso or somebody else at center. You know, I even heard that Holmes has been training at center. Obviously he's a bit bigger than Hamiso. So defensively that would make sense. I'd love to see like Holmes get named at center in round one, get the dual position center, and then Drinkwater doesn't do very well. Holmes shifts to fullback and we get a goal kicking fullback available at center. That would be like the absolute dream. If you ask me, like gun to my head, what do I expect is going to go out round one? I reckon it's going to be Holmes at the one and Drinkwater not in 17, but I don't feel overly confident about it.
If he is named at one, is he someone you'll consider in your team?
Mate, at the moment, I've got Tedesco, Trbojevic, and my guy here in the purple as my back three. So for me to bring Holmes in, I'd probably involve bringing Holmes in, taking Tedesco out, bringing Crichton in would be the likely sort of way that would go down. So I'd have to be pretty confident that Holmes was going to be the number one long-term. But if he is, I'll definitely be strongly considering that in my projections. So yeah, it's more like I really just want to wait and see how this trial game goes and where they sort of line up. And then I'll get a bit of a feel of how I feel about Holmes when I know where he's going to be playing. But yeah, at the moment I'm sort of counting on not having him, but then if I get him, then I'll take it as a bonus. Last guy on our list, and I don't think he'll be on the list of sub 10% players for very long, is Dane Laurie for the Tigers. So he's currently 9.7%, rock bottom price, or almost rock bottom at 246. He played a couple of games off the bench last year and one game starting where he was awesome. He's coming across to the Tigers. He's going to be their fullback. He was definitely going to be their fullback in 2022. So they're getting him started a year early on it. He's obviously a better player than Moses Zembai in terms of what they need from him.
I mean, it seems like a lot of people have started to figure out he's a good option, because when I was writing my notes on Wednesday for the podcast, he was at 3.6% ownership. So it's shot up 6% in a couple of days. So.
And the other 19.3% of teams are asleep.
Asleep at the wheel, but they are asleep. Yeah, I mean, for 246K for a fullback, yeah, I mean, and he looks a good thing too. Like he scored 55 in his one start for the Panthers at fullback last year.
13 tackles is weird for a fullback.
It is. It is a bit strange. Although that Bulldogs game was a bit of a weird game. They did flog him, though. I don't know. He also had one game in 2020 in reserve grade where he scored a 59 in round one. And he's had five other New South Wales Cup appearances in years prior, but it's sort of split between positions. Like it's only one game at fullback, three at the half, and one.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit all over the shop, but he seems like he's a good option. It seems like he should average at least 30s for that price. Get him in.
Definitely seems to pass the eye test.
For sure.
I guess in closing, I know we've obviously given you a lot of names here, and some of them are good and some of them we've highlighted, but then, you know, sort of basically talked ourselves out of it through the process here. But, you know, so essentially in our list of players here, stop me if you disagree with any of this, Ryan, but McCulloch, good as long as he's going to the Dragons. Egan, Rain, good as long as he's playing 65 plus minutes and no Cameron Smith. Taukeiaho, good, get him in immediately. Twal, Nathan Brown, pick your poison. Fifita, I think he's awesome. Ryan is in the closet about thinking he's awesome, but he thinks he's awesome. Keep an eye on him in the Indigenous game and see how many offloads he throws and how fit he looks. If he looks like he's going to do a good job, I reckon you can roll the dice on him, subject to your salary cap. Cole Matangi, if he's playing on the edge, good. Holler, good. Lenio, not good. Stefano, good. Barmasili, if he's starting. Alvaro, if he's starting. Arrow, somewhere in the middle. Depends on whether you think he's going to bounce back or not. Madison, good. Ford, bad. Davey, good. George Williams, depending on if you want to roll the dice on him over Munster. Brooks, probably not good. Momorowski, probably not good. Kelly, if you want a gun, he's your man. Holmes, if he's fullback. Hopewadi, if you want to spend on a good mid-range center that has some upside. And Laurie, very good. Happy with all that, Ryan?
Sounds good.
All right. Thank you to everybody for listening to us ramble for the last, I don't know how long. I'm sorry to all of your girlfriends and partners that need to listen to us talk. But I hope you enjoyed our episode, and we'll be back to give you a report next weekend when we find something interesting to talk to you about.
See you guys.